You can stay in Matthew chapter 5. We'll start there with our lesson this morning. Thank you for this opportunity to teach you this morning. Chapter 5, verse 12. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Jesus is speaking here, went up on a mountain to teach the people. And so the you is the Jewish people he's speaking to. But these lessons are for us as well. And that means our forefathers, if you will, the prophets. We could fit ourselves in there. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before us as well. We started a few weeks ago in the book of Matthew. Here in chapter 5 in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew introduces this idea of the blessing of persecution. It's kind of an oxymoron. Blessing of persecution. He starts off here with the Beatitudes, as they're commonly known. The word Beatitudes comes from a Latin word that we don't use much anymore. But they're stepping stones. It's not describing different types of people. It's painting the stepping stones that a new way of life in Christ would take someone. And where does it lead, this description of Beatitudes? It leads to persecution, and it leads to blessing. Matthew starts off with this genealogy, remember? And then he goes into a series of prophecies, the prophets who were persecuted, and he lays this foundation for believing that Jesus is the son of David, that he is the Messiah. But the point of the blessing of persecution is to bring it out of this academic, historical, that's really very interesting that he fulfilled all of these things. And it really brings it down to the heart of the matter, that living like Christ leads to persecution and blessing. Let's go back to verse 3 in chapter 5. So imagine, I don't know how many in this crowd are a boss, you know, you have the ability to hire someone, but try and put yourself in a scenario where you're going to hire someone and you're interviewing this person and they say something like, you know, I admit that I don't know everything, right? I admit that I have a lot to learn, but I'm willing to be taught. That would be a good thing, right? You want someone coming in saying, hey, I've got it all figured out. In fact, I'm coming for your job. Okay, see the door, right? I like my job. No, you want someone who's teachable. Matthew chapter 5, verse 3, blessed are the poor in spirit, those who realize how little they are before God. Those who realize how much they have to learn. Be a good quality in a prospective employee. Verse 4, blessed are those who mourn. First they see how much they are indebted to God, and then they're sorry. They're so sorry for what they've done and the sins that they've committed that they want to make it right. Don't you want an employee that would want to make things right just as quickly as possible? Or do you want someone who sweeps things under the desk and keeps it quiet until it all blows up and everyone deals with that? Now this would be an ideal person to hire. Go down to verse 4. I already read verse 7. Blessed are the merciful. Do you want someone who holds grudges? Those are fun people to be around, right? Man, I love me a person who can hold a grudge. Now this person comes in and says, you know, I don't hold grudges against people. If I have something to say to them, I'm going to go deal with it in a kind and effective manner. And then verse 9, blessed are the peacemakers. You want someone who's going to be a peaceful, productive worker. And so maybe the Beatitudes would describe the ideal person you would hire for a company. And that's all well and good. You're not getting this pious saint who comes in and says, I know everything, listen to me. But you're also not getting just a worker. You're getting someone who cares, a human being who cares, and yet they have a backbone, which kind of becomes a problem if you think about it. They're going to get along and they're going to be productive until something unethical comes up, or something foolish or something dishonest comes into play. And then that person, not because they're difficult or frustrating, but because they have a moral center, they're going to be a bit of a thorn in your side, provided you don't want to expose some of these things. I want to couch the blessing of persecution in this context of our everyday lives, because that's the kind of persecution we can face. We go to work, we go to school, we do these various things, and we're supposed to be, a Christian ought to be the person that you want to hire. I mean, that's the, frankly, the way it should be. A Christian should be the hardest working, most eager to make things right. And yet, the Bible says Christians are going to be rejected in this world. We're going to be persecuted. Because we're not going to back down when the world asks us to compromise that for which we stand for. The Beatitudes are about being the right kind of person. It's not so much stuff that you go out and do, a checklist that you check, but it's about being the right person and developing the strength to endure the consequences of being the right person. Is it easy to be the right person? I mean, everybody wants to be the right kind of person, and the world says, I want to be the right kind of person, but go try being the right kind of person. Man, this is hard. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Here's what I'd like to try and cover today. We'll see if we can get through it. What kind of persecution did Jesus have in mind? And what kind of a life ought to lead to suffering and rejection and persecution? The school that I work at once in a while. You know, you're not these kids' parents, so you can't parent them. But one thing they want you to do is they want you to take a problem. When a kid has a problem, you know, they're fighting at recess or they're having trouble getting their homework done, they want you to take that problem and hand it back to the kid, right? So they feel the consequences of their actions. So they don't just learn that adults will just make all my problems go away and become lazy, unproductive adults. They want you to hand, and they give you skills to hand the problem back to the kid. And here's what you say, and here's what you do, and here's how you think. But aside from all of that science and technique, if you're not prepared for a child's reaction to you giving them their problem back, and if you wilt under their reaction to that, then guess what? You don't have a skill. We can go through all kinds of training to better educate someone, but if we're not prepared for their initial reaction and rejection of that new skill, I come to a kid and he says, hey, I'm fighting with Johnny out on the playground. And I say, okay, well, you need to go deal with that. And he throws some kind of a fit. And I'm like, okay, I'll just make your life easy. Just come on, let's make this better. Then I don't really have any skills, do I? There's backbone standing up to the kid in a kind and productive and effective way. In this way, discipleship is a path, and you learn to be the right kind of person. And then the test comes, and you face some type of persecution, and that really determines whether you've embraced this new life or not. Because if you failed to stand up to persecution, then you really don't have a new life. However, there is great blessing in the flip side. Let's go back to the Beatitudes, and I want to walk slowly through these. Think of these as a journey. Blessed are the poor in spirit, those who believe that they are sinful. How important is that, to believe that you are sinful? Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who are sad for their sins and mourn over the things that they have done wrong. Blessed are the meek. Meekness, you've probably heard this, it's maybe a bit of a cliche, but meekness is not weakness. There's no weakness in being humble. There's no weakness in being obedient. Blessed are the meek. And so you realize how sinful you are. You mourn the sins that you have, and you realize the only way out of this is to be humble and obedient to God. You develop within yourself a hunger and thirst for righteousness. We're going to eat here in an hour or two, and you're going to be satisfied. And then in maybe 4 hours, or 1 hour if you're me, you're going to get hungry again, right? You develop a thirst for righteousness in which you do the right thing, and you're only satisfied when you do the right thing. And then you get hungry to do the right thing again. Hunger and thirst for righteousness. And this develops a person who is merciful. Blessed are the merciful, those who are kind and forgiving, because they realize how much they've been forgiven. Blessed are the pure in heart. It's realizing that in God and following God's way and in Christ that you do have a pure heart. It's not piousness or arrogance. It's realizing if I do the things the way God tells me to, then I don't have to feel guilty about my life. Boy, that's an amazing blessing, right? You go back to work on Monday and you can feel good about what you did that weekend. Boy, I'm glad I forgot what I did last weekend. No, you feel good about your life. And you feel good about what God is doing for you. And so verse 9, blessed are the peacemakers, those who seek to help others make peace with God. And then here it comes, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. I'm going to share the good things in my life, even with those who would hurt me. Rejection. Don't get me wrong. I don't wish. You got to be careful how you say this. Jesus says persecution is blessed, but it's not something that you wish on people, right? Man, I hope you guys go out and just get beat up this week, right? You don't wish it on somebody, but if it's not happening in your life, then maybe there's something wrong. Rejection, persecution makes this new life extremely difficult. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing easy about this. But because it is the work of Christ in us, there's nothing that can stop it. You see, there's a weakness to persecution. Persecution can't stop the work of Christ. It can make our life hard. It can make things miserable. But it has no power against the work of Christ. You don't have to think too much about persecution, and you start to think about those who have been under threat of life, those who have given their life for the gospel, those who have been martyred. That's some intense persecution, and Jesus calls our attention to that when he says, remember the prophets? Boy, they had a hard go of things. Some of them, God came to and he said, I want you to preach, and everyone's going to reject you and hate you, and they may even throw you in a hole, and they may throw you in jail, and I want you to preach until there's no one left to preach to. That's difficult, right? And there's a special recognition for that. But where does Jesus start when he defines persecution for us? Like the Beatitudes are a stepping stone in the life of a faithful Christian, I think there can be a progression to persecution. And so we shouldn't throw our hands up and say, well, I'm not persecuted because I'm not under threat of life. Let's see where Jesus starts. Let's go to chapter 5, verse 11. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. What's he talking about here? He's talking about being slandered or being scorned or being insulted or being rejected. We haven't gotten to bodily harm yet, but there's a certain element of rejection going on here. He expands that over in chapter 10 when he talks in particular to his apostles. He's about to send them and he says, okay, it's going to move beyond people just thinking negatively of you or trying to brush you off or be like, oh, that's that weird Christian person, right? It's going to be elevated. Jesus expands it in chapter 10, verse 14. He says, if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, Shake off the dust from your feet when you leave that house or town. I want to focus in on that first part there. If anyone will not receive you, it progresses to a lack of hospitality. Or if they will not listen to you, there's a disregard for the things that you have to say. They write it off as some kind of religious fanaticism or whatever. And so we've gone from insult and maybe not fitting in quite right to being actively rejected, a lack of hospitality and a disregard for what you have to say. Go over to verse 16. And behold, he says, I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in the synagogues. He's now telling his apostles, his 12, that you're going to go and you're going to start upsetting the religious people amongst you. Have you ever had to break with a religious tradition because of your faith? Have you ever had strife in your family because of what Christ means to you? Are there certain people you just in your family where suddenly Christ's name comes up and things get really awkward? Some of us have the blessing of parents and grandparents that you can call and talk to about your faith. Others, it's a difficult subject, but Christ warns of the blessing of persecution in that instance. Verse 21. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death, and you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. Some will face death, some will face ridicule. All will be rejected in some way at some time. We're all by nature self-led people. You see it more easily in babies and two-year-olds, and they're not held accountable for their rebellion there, but it's all about what they want at that time. And I know I've made this analogy before, but you probably know some adults who act like two-year-olds, right? That's not any fun. We're self-led. And once we start to make the attempt at living a God-led life, the God-led person is going to come in conflict with the self-led person. Not because they're looking for trouble, but because of the nature of their choices and their decision and their outlook upon life. It's to be expected. We go back to that idea of a backbone, and if you have skills but you can't stand up to the reaction, then you have no new skills. If you face the reaction that comes to a new God-led life, then we have new life indeed. And Christ says there is great blessing in standing up to that. And so we've talked a little bit about the kind of persecution. When Stephen was martyred, you know, we see Jesus standing up, and there was this special recognition of his great sacrifice. But Jesus recognizes all persecution that his people go through. I want to move on now to the kind of life that ought to lead to persecution. I think I might be... Oh, no, I'm getting there. It's allowed. If I'm getting behind on my slides, say something, please. What kind of a life? I remember as a young person, as a much younger person than I am now, right? I got to be careful saying that. As like a teenager, okay? And we were having this Thanksgiving meal, and there were some other friends there, and this other boy who was like a senior in high school, he loved to ride Bronx, you know, bucking bulls, and he loved to drive fast cars. And his parents got to this point, and this I remember this phrase clearly. They said, you know, if you're gonna be dumb, then you better be tough. You know. Mommy, what does that mean, right? So then they had to try and figure out how to explain. If you're going to be dumb, you're going to be tough. Or I hope you are. But is there a blessing for persecution because of dumb things that you do? Is there a blessing when you go do something foolish? Or how about you say something without tact, right? I've done that plenty of times where you just stick your foot in your mouth. Blessed are those who stick their foot in their mouth. No, Blessed are those who ask for forgiveness for sticking their foot in their mouth, right? 1 Peter chapter 4, turn over there with me. Peter, I think, hits this right on the head. Chapter 4, verse 12. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 12. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you, but rejoice in so far as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. If you're insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. But let none of you suffer as a murderer or a thief or an evildoer or as a meddler. As Peter's saying, if you're going to be dumb, then I hope you're tough. Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name. We might be persecuted, but we got to ask ourselves, is it because I did something foolish or because I stuck my foot in my mouth? Let's go back to Matthew chapter 10. We're not told a lot about Jesus' followers. Matthew chapter 10, we're not told much about Jesus' followers. We know that one of them was a tax collector, Matthew was. We know some of them were fishermen. One of them, Simon the Zealot, or Simon the Canaanean. This guy would have faced persecution, but there was a difference. You see, the Zealots and the Canaanians were a part of this popular movement to rebel against the Roman government. It's kind of like today, you know those people, you know, the way they dress or the way they act. It's kind of cool to be a rebel, right? I'm against the establishment, and I don't stand for what is traditional, right? But it's cool, and you can buy the clothes that make you look like that, and you can eat the food that associates you with those kind of people. And you endure some kind of persecution, but you're really being persecuted for your own idea. The Zealots or the Canaanians, they would attack the Romans, and they would commit violence against the Romans. And most certainly the Romans would try and put them down, and most certainly there were Zealots who were crucified and persecuted and killed. But you don't hear in history that Jesus blesses Simon for any of those, you know, not just radical, because Jesus was radical in his own way, but sort of this defiance that wasn't associated with Jesus. 1 Thessalonians 4, let's let Paul speak to us again. This isn't foolishness. Simon would have signed up for this knowingly before he met Christ, obviously. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 11. Aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent upon no one. There's this element of the Christian life that we don't have to go with pitchforks and burning torches to go burn down all the evil governments that are standing against us. There's a difference between, you know, stumbling upon a hornet's nest and going and kicking one over and seeing what happens, right? 1 Timothy chapter 2. Let's listen for a moment what Paul asks that people should pray for. First of all, then, I urge you that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgiving be made for all people, for kings and all who are in high places, that we may live a quiet and peaceful life, godly and dignified in every way. Do you understand the difference there? There was like this political, social movement that Simon the Zealot was a part of. And Jesus says, don't be persecuted because you're associated with some popular movement. Be persecuted for my sake. Go back to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 5, verse 10. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. What does that mean? What ought we to be persecuted for? Verse 11. He says, blessed are you when others revile you, persecute you, and utter evil, all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. So he defines righteousness. The righteousness that the Christian is persecuted for is for the name of Jesus. Matthew chapter 5, verse 3 is very closely paralleled over here in Psalm 40, verse 17. It basically says the same thing. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Psalms talks about how poor in spirit that the psalmist is. Matthew chapter 5, verse 5 and Psalm 37, 11. Blessed are the merciful. Jesus was doing what no other scribe or rabbi would do. He's taking these ideas from the Psalms and from the Old Testament, and he's laying claim to them. It's like he invented them or something. Right? And he steps forth and he says, I'm giving you this teaching, and if you're persecuted for this teaching, it's for my name, it's for me. The other scribes, they wouldn't say that. They wouldn't want people to attach persecution to them necessarily. But that's where part of Jesus' authority comes from here. We're talking about the king, the son of David, telling people how his citizens are supposed to act. And he says that the ideal citizen functions and prays and serves and loves, and as good as they are, it's going to be rejected because it's from Jesus and it's from God. And blessed are those who are persecuted for being like Jesus. What's the worst thing that can happen to the church? We're not going to come up with an answer, because there's probably a lot of bad things that could happen. What's the worst thing, do you think, that could happen to the church? Think about that for a moment. This picture here, I think it's a picture of a guy named Hippolytus from AD 170. It could be a statue just representing a generic group of church leaders from back in the second century here. But he was involved with the church in Rome back in AD 170. He and this other fella named Zephrinus was kind of a rascally fellow, and they got to where they were butting heads. And it got so bad that the church split because of their conflict. And Hippolytus, he lived quite a while. Zephrinus died, and then another guy named Pontaneus, these are pretty cool names, right? Another guy named Pontaneus comes along, and as long as things are sort of going well and there's no persecution, the church remains split and divided. These two men, and maybe they were standing for good things, but nevertheless, the church remained divided. What's the worst thing that can happen to the church? I'll tell you, Jesus tells us that it's not persecution. Persecution is not the worst thing that can happen to the church. Read the book of Acts. Persecution was one of the great blessings that spread the gospel throughout the world. It's how God got people moving. He didn't say, sit down and plan this perfectly and then go do it so you can say, look, we had this awesome plan and we spread the gospel. He says, figure out how to live like Christ, and then I'm going to send people to persecute you and scatter you. You know what happened to the church in Rome? Maybe this is an answer. If Robert and I ever, you know, get at a disagreement, this is what they did. The Romans came along and they sent Hippolytus to the salt mines of Sardinia. Boy, that sounds bad, doesn't it? The salt mines of Sardinia. So they sent Hippolytus and Pontaneus to these salt mines to be persecuted and to be punished. And guess what happened? Those two guys mended their friendship before they died. And guess what happened to the church in Rome? They got back together. And I'm not saying they held hands and said, kumbaya, and we'll just forget all of our mistakes. There was real healing that went on. Healing that could not come about by the workings of man, but by the blessing of persecution. I don't want to begin to think about the worst thing that can happen to the church. But I do know that it's not persecution. In persecution, the church does a lot more praying and a lot less disputing. The church does a lot more fellowship and a lot less gossip. There is blessing and validation of faith and even healing that can take place
during the persecution of the church. I'll get to that in just a moment. We've come where I want to give us some application here. And I just want to begin the conversation because I can't begin to judge what kind of circumstances or persecution you might face in your life. You know, the thing about when Jesus was sharing with the Jews, they weren't under persecution right then for following Jesus, but eventually they would be. And I don't know who among this audience, maybe you're not significantly or violently persecuted now, but who knows, but that couldn't begin someday. And so we prepare for that. And one way we prepare is by praying for Christ's body that is under threat of life right now. I remember going to a youth camp once, and they sort of told some stories about Christians abroad and some of the challenges and persecutions that they were facing. And they didn't say, go feel guilty because you don't have people chasing after you. They said, go pray for these people because these persecuted Christians want you to pray for them. And if that role is ever reversed, you can count on the fact that they would be praying for you. Pray for Christ's body. Learn about Christ's body across the world and how it is being persecuted, and pray for them. But let's consider persecution perhaps that we might face. You know, I found this statistic here, and you know, whatever you want to do with statistics, but it throws out this idea that over half of adults are interested in how faith and spirituality affects their personal life. Right? Over half. So every other person you talk to on the street at least has an interest about how faith and real life intersect. That's kind of good news, right? And it says well over half of people are interested in having some kind of meaningful life. But despite this widespread interest in faith, there is a widespread interest in faith. I go to coffee shops and I go to different places and you see faith and you see advertisements for churches and you see Bible studies going on. And yet maybe you've had a moment like this. You're at work and suddenly everybody starts talking bad about their spouse. And suddenly it sort of becomes who can one-up each other. Well, my husband did this and well, my husband did this. And then it comes to you and you're like, but I love my spouse. And suddenly you're the odd person out for not joining in saying bad things about your spouse. And suddenly you might be labeled as, oh, that's the pious person with the perfect marriage, right? Who's too good for us. You're like, no, you can slander me like that, but I'm not going to fall into saying bad things about my husband or my wife because that's not what Christ would have me to do. Now, maybe you say something or maybe you don't, but have you ever been in that situation? I think that's a taste of persecution. I know your spouse would bless you if you held your tongue in that moment. I think Christ would as well. I sort of alluded to this before, but someone comes in on a Monday and they sort of start telling about how really, I don't know what else to say, debaucherous. That's an old-timey word, right? But just kind of how wild their weekend was. And if they were so confident in, you know, in how right that was, then why is it that they always pause and they sort of wait for you to be like, oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it. You know, you're really not that bad of a person. Again, I'm not saying you back them in a corner and run them down. Maybe that's not what they need. But when you don't approve of people's sinful lifestyle, I think you face persecution in that instance as well. You can't put your rubber stamper on sin. You can show them the way out. Maybe Christ has caused a painful separation in your family, and yet you continue to love your family. You continue to be the right kind of person because you don't know how God is going to work things out in them. Blessed are you when you are reviled for the name of Jesus, when you're persecuted for righteousness. Okay? Insofar as you are rejected on account of Christ, I want to share with you, and these are the blessings of the Beatitudes, but I want to close with things that persecution cannot stop. Persecution cannot do these things. It cannot kick you out of God's kingdom.
Persecution cannot rob you of God's comfort.
It cannot steal your inheritance laid up in heaven. Persecution can never take the satisfaction of doing the right thing. Persecution never negates God's forgiveness. Persecution never stops you from seeing God. It never prevents you from living as God's child. And persecution will never force you out of the family of God.
Persecution is hard, but Jesus says, "Blessed are you when you are persecuted for my name." Thank you for your time and your attention this morning. If there's a need that the church can help you with, if you'd like to begin this walk of life as the Beatitudes describe, then we'd like to help you take that first step. If you need to come back into the family and remember the things you've done wrong and mourn for those sins and ask for reconciliation, then we'd be happy to help you with that as well. Come forward and let's stand and sing together.